Hello and welcome to Comment, Press TV's weekly show that gives you an opportunity to have your say on the events happening around the world. My name is Derek Conway and I'm here standing in for George Galloway. I don't want his fans to be worried. He'll be back next week. But we want to hear from you on this program, whether you want to call us by telephone, text us by SMS, or send us an email. I'll give you the numbers now and we really would like to hear from you. By telephone, the number is 0044 208-601-4555, and we'll call you back so the cost will not fall on you. That's an SMS number. You can text us by calling 0044 780 008055, and then the email number, email address is comment@presstv.co.uk. That's comment@presstv.co.uk. And I'd really like to hear what you have to say. Any views I express to you are purely my own. It doesn't reflect Press TV official policy. I don't speak for them. They don't tell me what to say. They don't tell me what I can't say either. And neither are we going to do that to you, because we genuinely like to hear your views from around the world. We've had some very interesting comments in the past about the week's events. We're broadcasting, of course, tonight from London, where it's been so hot this week, it's even hotter than Mogadishu. So we're all sweltering a little bit and used to such intense heat in the capital of Great Britain. And we've had some political excitement too here in London, where the Iraq inquiry eventually launched by Prime Minister Brown is heading into very choppy waters already, when very senior Army General Sir Mike Jackson came out critical of former Premier Tony Blair and his successor, now Gordon Brown, who was the Chancellor of the Exchequer, the Finance Minister, during the last Labour government. And General Sir Mike Jackson was critical of Tony Blair for being so uncritical about Americans' flawed invasion plans for Iraq. So that's a very bumpy and very unexpected start to the Iraq inquiry. The British press have made great play this week of the 85 Sharia courts which sit across the United Kingdom. Many of them, their judgments are endorsed by the British courts under the English and Scottish legal systems. And that's not unusual in the United Kingdom. There have been Jewish Bethdin courts for many decades. But the press tried to play this as a way of stirring up racial and religious distrust. And across the water, of course, from us in Britain, in France, President Sarkozy has been very critical of French women who wear the burqa. The French, you may recall, banned the wearing of a Muslim headscarf in schools or in any government buildings, and now the president is turning his sights onto the wearing of the burqa. So if you have a view on that, whatever that view is, then we would like to hear from you, especially if you happen to be living in France. But of course, tomorrow, I'm sure you will know, is the 21st anniversary of the shooting down of the Iran airliner 655. It happened on the 3rd of July, 1988, and the United States warship USS Vincennes fired two missiles at the civilian airliner, which bombed it and brought it crashing into the sea, removing 290 souls from this world, 66 of them children, a dreadful casualty toll. And the images you are about to see are of a disturbing nature.
I strongly condemn these unjust actions, and I join with the American people in mourning each and every innocent life that is lost.
Obama's words paint a picture of America supporting Iran. His speech offers a friendly tone, but this picture differs when we rewind back in time. On the 3rd of July 1988, the world witnessed a barbaric massacre of innocent civilians. This day was to become the blackest day in the history of aviation. At the hands of the US Navy cruiser Vincennes, a most brutal terrorist act was performed. Iran Air Airbus A300B2 launched into the air not to return to landing, claiming to have assumed that the Flight 655 was a warship. The commander of the US Vincennes ordered the shooting of the plane. Two missiles were thus fired from the American warship. The aircraft was hit, and all 290 people aboard were killed. The truth could not be concealed, and 1 month later, with hard-hitting evidence and nuclear proof, the US authorities were forced to acknowledge that the Airbus was in commercial flight corridor, flying at 12,000 feet and not descending. It is nonetheless not surprising to learn that the United States has never apologized for such brutal mass murder. Rather, the USS Vincennes were later to receive medals for their works. Was America therefore glorifying its crime? George H.W. Bush, at the time Vice President of the U.S. in the Reagan administration, defended the act as appropriate. Downing the plane, the civilians plunged to their watery grave. It took several days to fish the dead from the cold Gulf waters. No apology was made, no compensation was given, and no regret was shown. With such a history, how much truth can Obama's words convey?
That we want justice to prevail.
Sadly, nothing can be done for the 290 people who were killed in that tragedy, but an apology is the least that their families are still waiting for 21 years later. And hopefully President Obama on the 21st anniversary tomorrow may think of giving those families some sort of comfort. Now we have an SMS message coming in, so let's see what our first caller has to say. And where are you coming from? From the United Arab Emirates, Emma Ali, welcome. Please mention the anniversary of Iran Flight 655. Well, of course we have. Tell us about the act of terrorism by the U.S. Navy. So who is terrorist, the USA or Palestinian who defend their home? Well, Emma, I think clearly the captain of the warship was not acting as a terrorist in that sense, and I doubt he very much intended to do what he did. There's never been a suggestion that was the case. But the actions of the United States at the time were wrong, and they should apologize. And so people are right to be angry that they preach one law for others. The United States is a big nation, and I don't think it would be a bad thing for them to apologize for what was an absolute tragedy. And I'm glad you've raised it as we've mentioned it tonight, and maybe other callers have too. We have an email that's come through, so let's see who's emailing us. I hope a better typer than I am at the keyboard, and this is from Bob Ezekiel in Nigeria. Welcome, Nigeria. June the 1st, 2009, Airbus A330 crashes into the Atlantic Ocean off the coast of Brazil, killing all passengers and crew on board the plane. June the 30th, 2009, Airbus A310 crashes into the Indian Ocean off the coast of Comoros Island, killing 152 out of 153 people on board. Please tell us, is the Airbus now an air coffin whose main duty is ferrying people to their untimely graves? Well, Bob, one of my responsibilities, I travel a lot, and I have to fly a lot as well, and so the comment you make is quite scary. Of course, these have been tragic accidents, but I actually think the Airbus record in air crash terms is not as bad as many other manufacturing airlines. I don't have to explain what Airbus is doing. They'll have to explain it to themselves, but I gather that air travel is still much safer than traveling via the other form, but clearly that's little compensation to the families who've lost their lives in these tragedies. We've got an email that's come in, and this is from where? This is from Atef in Australia. We've had a few Australians before come onto this program. I have no idea what time it is there. But the venom of the Western media and official governments directed towards Iran on the aftermath of the Iranian elections made me think of their stance on the killing fields of Gaza and their muted apologetic inaction, citing Israel as the only liberal democracy in the Middle East. When are we going to witness a just world free of bias and bullying? Well, Atef, interestingly, this week in the British House of Lords, which is the highest legal appeal court in the United Kingdom, a case was just lost where a Palestinian was seeking to have open the background to the arms certificates which the British government issue to arms manufacturers who supply the State of Israel. Arms are not supposed to be supplied by Britain if human rights are being breached. And there are so many documented examples of breaches of human rights in Palestine, including, of course, in United Nations resolutions too. So I think the point that you make far away in Australia is a very fair one. Now we have a phone call. So, where are you calling from? Hello, can you hear me?
Hello, I can hear you, Sir Derek.
You're coming through loud and clear. Welcome. What's your name?
My name is Andrew McAllister.
Andrew, welcome.
First of all, I'd like to give my solidarity to all the poor Palestinians who suffered continuously, and I feel it for them.
Yeah.
I would like also that you and possibly George Galloway would be as enthusiastic with all the ex-British people from Zimbabwe under the total terrible regime of Mugabe. Can you fight them?
Well, I think, Andrew, what's happening in Zimbabwe is a tragedy. I mean, there are many parts of the world and many parts of Africa where it's so difficult to grow crops and make a living for ordinary working people. And yet, Zimbabwe has the most amazing climate and temperatures. And so it's a very fertile part of Africa. And it's a tragedy to see what could be a very stable and successful nation in such a dreadful state. Mugabe, of course, is not a young man, and whether he'll be taken to meet his maker soon, who knows? He's in his mid-80s now, but he's not served the people of Zimbabwe well by any fair judgment, and I think it's a disgrace that he continues. How long it will go on for, who knows? But sadly, there are many people around the world who are dictators of their countries where they're not serving their people well. How long will they have to serve? It'll be interesting to see, but that's a very fair point. Are you calling from Zimbabwe? He's gone. We've lost you, Andrew, so we'll have to go to an email, but thank you for calling, Andrew. And now we have an email coming up with the wonders of technology. This is from Francis MacDonald calling from Regensburg in Germany. Press TV, when President Obama spoke in Cairo, Egypt, he made two comments which I find hard to accept. In the first statement, the president said that he believed Iraq was better off now than it was before the 2003 war. In the second statement, the president said the well-known bond between Israel and the USA is unbreakable, and the bond is based upon cultural and historical ties. I believe the president was speaking on behalf of the Israeli lobby. What say you? Well, I think, Francis, it's well known that American politics has a very heavy Israeli bias, and that's gone on across the political parties, Democrats, Republicans, for years and years and years. And I think anyone who expects President Obama to abandon Israel is going to be disappointed. But you make the point. I think Obama is a decent man who's trying, and I think we, for now anyway, have to give him the benefit of the doubt. He's got some difficult decisions to take, but he's urged Israel not to go on with the settlements. The Germans today came out and urged Israel to stop building in the settlements. Most of the Western democracies are urging that. So there must come a point where they say to Israel, enough is enough. Now we're going to have an SMS message. So who's texting the program tonight? And welcome Mayul Kut from the USA. I think Iranians are responsible for their country. Iranians should know that their president is good for the Iranian people. There is no need for others to concern about the outcome of the election. Well, I think you're quite right. It's for the Iranian people to decide who they want to elect. I've often made the point that here in the United Kingdom, Prime Minister Gordon Brown's party was elected with only 22% of the vote. So I don't think the British government can be too high on its moral high horse about what goes on in other elections around the globe. But you've made your point from the USA, and we're very grateful to have had your call. We're going to take another email. And this is coming in from which part of the world, I wonder? This is from Cameroon. Keeson, thank you for emailing us in Cameroon. I wonder why the US and UK take upon themselves to be those who validate elections around the world, up to the point where some African seat tides employ the services of senior US citizens off to come and validate fraudulent elections. Is this not an extension of the neo-colonialist tendencies? Well, I think, Keeson, you know, you are making a point that many people around the world feel that democracies, I still personally believe, are the best way of governing a country, but they're not without their faults. And I think the American system, which is not perfect, very heavily dominated by how much money you can raise, the British system, which has huge faults, as I mentioned earlier. So I think maybe lecturing people from Western democracies about how they go about their business is not always a reasonable thing to be doing. But I think we're entitled to express a view of a country's elections, but I think we have to have a weather eye on what happens in our own backyards before we do that. We're going to take another email. And where's this from? This is from NWFP Parjana Wataniya. What's he saying? If this true that Press TV is voice for the voiceless, then why Press TV is neglecting the pathetic situation in Parjana Kiram Agency, he says. In the Afghanistan-Pakistan border, where this area is under siege for the last 29 months and is being attacked by cruel Wahhabis every day, people are being slaughtered like sheep. Can you please raise this to the Press TV? Is there any free man with free soul to speak about these unfortunate people? Well, you've not been censored in any way to express your view. Obviously, many programs on Press TV cover international affairs, and we're grateful for you contacting us to express your view. I think people are interested to know what's going on in the Afghanistan-Pakistan borders, where, of course, there have been the most dreadful battles, and whilst soldiers and armed forces and vested interests and terrorists have their sway, we should spare a thought quite often for the poor civilians who are caught up in the middle of all this, just trying to survive. They're often the ones that take the worst punishment, and that's a great tragedy. Now let's take an email. And this is from Abby Ben in the United Kingdom. And Abby says, the BBC has again been caught engaging in mass public deception by using photographs of pro-Ahmadinejad rallies in Iran and claiming they represent anti-government protests and favor of Hossein Mousavi. An image used by the Los Angeles Times on the front page of its website on Tuesday showed the Iranian president Ahmadinejad waving to a crowd of supporters at a public event. In a story covering the election protests yesterday, the BBC News website used a close a shot of the same scene, but with Ahmadinejad cut out of the frame. The caption under the photograph read, supporters of Mir Hossein Mousavi again defied a ban on protests. The BBC photograph was clearly a similar shot of the same pro-Ahmadinejad rally featured in the LA Times image, yet the caption erroneously claims it represents anti-Ahmadinejad protesters. What really happened? Well, I think, Abby, the point you make that the BBC is not necessarily always the arbiter of all things truthful. And like many news organizations, it will edit pictures, and it does edit pictures, and it gives often a very biased view of what's happening, not maybe only in Tehran, but in many other countries around the world. I don't know, you don't know exactly what's going on in Tehran as we see it from the UK. It's for the Iranian people, I think, to decide. I have no idea what Press TV official view is, because I don't speak for Press TV. They've not told me what their view is or what to say. My own view is it's for the Iranian people to decide the outcome of their elections, whether the results were as they were, whether it was closer, who knows. But I think in the UK, we probably need to look at our own election base before we start lecturing others around the globe. And we've got an SMS, we've got a text message coming in. And this is an SMS from a Palestinian Gazan in Sweden. I saw last week how anybody can get to Paris to demonstrate there against Iran without having to pay a penny. Many friends got there to see friends, but they had to stand in those rallies. The EU, the European Union, is paying the trip and hotel. It is a game that is called human rights. Well, I don't really know about the details of what the EU is paying. I must tell you, I think the European Union does pay for some very extraordinary things, and it does take a political stance. It was initially supposed to bring countries together for commercial purposes, but it does like to paddle its own canoe a bit with public money. And so I think the point you raise is a fair one. Whether any bureaucrat in Brussels will be listening to this program, who knows? They could always call us. We're going to take a phone call next. And who's that from? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello, who's that?
My name is Ainsley McKenzie.
Ainsley,
and I'm calling from London.
Ainsley, lovely to have you on the show. What would you like to say?
Right. I would just like to address a comment you made with reference to the Iranian airliner that was shot down 21 years ago.
Yeah.
With a loss of 297 lives, I think.
290,
now,
I believe,
you made a comment to the SMS that came in that the naval captain who shot the plane down was not a terrorist. Now, here is a situation. In Palestine, the occupied people of Palestine are using homemade rockets in defense against all the American military might that Israel has at their disposal. And they are branded terrorists. Now, here is a captain of a naval vessel, military vessel, or America's army, and they've shot down deliberately in cold blood. They have shot down a passenger airliner with 297 people losing their lives. They were no threat. Now, isn't that an act of terrorism, or how do you define a terrorist?
Well, Ainsley, fortunately, I'm not here to defend the United States or speak for them, but I don't personally believe that the captain of that warship was intent on shooting down an airliner with 290 civilians on board. I think all the inquiries that came out after that tragedy showed that the captain of the warship believed it was an incoming F-14 fighter, and sadly they weren't able to get through to the aeroplane because they weren't on the military net. Subsequently, I gather, U.S. warships now do carry radios capable of monitoring the civilian airwaves, and so that hopefully that kind of tragedy couldn't occur. But, I mean, you're entitled to a view, and many people maybe would think it was deliberate. I'm personally not convinced about that. I don't think there's any evidence. But I do believe the United States should apologize for the tragedy, which I think is, you know, as a blot on America's record, and I don't think it's good for them.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling, Ainsley. We're going to take a text message next, an SMS. This is from Simone in Newcastle. Now, Simona, I was born in Newcastle, so I'm a Geordie, so it's lovely to have your message. Nobody even voted for Gordon Brown in the UK, or the Lords, or the monarchy. Something is wrong with the system here. Well, as one Geordie, I don't know whether you are a Geordie, that's what we call people who come from Newcastle upon Tyne. It's a fair point that Tony Blair was returned as Prime Minister of Great Britain and promised to serve for the full term of the Parliament, and yet after a couple of years he was driven out of office by his own party and Gordon Brown took over. And so his electoral legitimacy is very slim. And as I say, only one in five of the British public entitled to vote did so for the government, present government of the UK. That may change next time. We'll have to wait and see. The election must be by June of next year. But if I was a betting man, which sadly I'm not because I've no idea how to do it, but I don't believe Gordon Brown will be occupying 10 Downing Street this time next year. But we'll have to wait and see. But thank you for that message. We've got an email coming in. And where's this from? This is from Peru. Salma, thank you for emailing us from Peru. I'm from Peru. We, the Indians and other free-thinking citizens, just won a massive battle against the settler government and military of Yehud Simon. They tried to sell the Peruvian jungle to the oil companies and remove us with their Spanish and EU-trained military. But we were steadfast and will not be removed from any more of our native ancient land. Well, Sam, I'm not going to pretend that I know the details of what goes on in your part of Peru, but I think many people are concerned about environmental issues and many people are concerned about deforestation in so many parts of South, Central and South America. And so it's good that people are made aware of the impact on native populations when this sort of thing is happening. And I'm glad you've had your chance to say what you wanted to say on Press TV, but I'm afraid I can't comment about the detail of the point you make, but I'm sure many of our viewers will be very interested in what you've had to tell us. We're going to have an email come in next. And this is from Jocelyn in London, in the heat, Jocelyn. I think that the members of the United Nations who voted against Israel in its war crimes and crimes against humanity should be hammering on the UN's door to enforce the resolutions against them, militarily if need be. If the North American president fails, as a close friend of Israel, to bring a just solution to the violent, racist military occupation of Palestine, do you think the UN sending military forces to enforce the resolutions will be the last resort? Well, I think, Jocelyn, you make a fair point. The UN resolutions those critical of Israel have not been enforced, and I think that's a great shame. It's something now like 1,860 people, civilians, have lost their lives since the last intifada in Palestine, and 300 of them children, against a fairly small casualty count for the Israeli Defense Forces. So when you see soldiers versus civilians, it's not really much of a contest, is it? So I think you make a fair point, and thank you for that email. We're now going to take a short break, and I hope you stay with us. We'll not be gone very long, just a couple of minutes. Come back.